Today is November 13th, 2018. It has been 1 week since Canada's Minister of Families, Children and Social Development, Jean-Yves Duclos, tabled Bill C-87, Canada's Poverty Reduction Strategy.
Thanks for tuning in to Beyond the Headlines. You're listening to our new podcast show called The Weekly. On this week's panel, we have me, Dimitri Trellis,
Alex Goldapel,
Shalini Rampalam,
and we'll be discussing the implications of the new federal poverty reduction strategy today.
In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Joe Gunn from Citizens for Public Justice and Laura Neidhart from Canada Without Poverty. But before that, Shalini, can you tell us what we need to know about Bill C-87?
Yeah, sure. So this legislation isn't about creating new funding or creating new programs, but instead it's about being explicit and being clear on what we mean by poverty reduction. So for the first time in Canada's history, this bill proposes three things. First, it proposes to reach an official measure of poverty. So up until now, discussions of poverty reduction have been focused on three very different ways of measuring poverty. And Tuesday's bill selects one, the market basket measure. Mm-hmm. So the market basket measure is a measure of low income based on the cost of specific basket goods and services. So it takes into account the cost of things like food, clothing, transportation, and shelter. It represents a modest, basic standard of living and provides thresholds for poverty according to different geographic levels. Other measures of income that were previously used were stuff like the low income measure, measured by Stats Canada and defines as 50% of median household incomes, or the low income cutoff, which is based on the percentage of income spent on necessities. The second thing this bill proposes is to entrench into legislation ambitious and concrete poverty reduction targets. A 20% reduction in poverty by 2020 and a 50% reduction in poverty by 2030. These are all relative to the 2015 levels. The third thing that this bill proposes is to create an arm's-length National Advisory Council on Poverty, which would provide advice to the Minister of Families, Children and Social Development and include a dedicated advisor on children's issues to continue a national dialogue with Canadians and produce public reports each year on the progress made towards poverty reduction targets.
So we've had the facts. Let's hear what some of the experts have to say. We are now joined on the line by Joe Gunn, the Executive Director of Citizens for Public Justice. Joe, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for joining us. So I guess my first question is, what is your reaction to Bill C-87, Canada's Poverty Reduction Strategy?
The first reaction would have to be relief. A lot of anti-poverty activists across Canada have been working for a long time. In our case, when we established the Dignity for All, the campaign for a poverty-free Canada in 2009 in Calgary in a social forum, a Canadian social forum. We now have 700 organizations, 12,000 individuals that have signed on to support that campaign. So we've been calling for a decade for a poverty reduction plan. And, you know, finally, after the UN has twice called upon Canada to do this, after every single province except one, BC has a plan. BC is now working on a plan. The federal government has finally decided to do it. So it's overdue and we're relieved and glad to see it.
So I was wondering what you think about their choice of the definition on a basket measure. Do you think that that's a good choice on behalf of the federal government?
Yeah, the government's even going to carry out a consultation around that. They had a council of advisors and came to that determination. The minister himself, as you know, is an academic who studied these kinds of issues in depth and has he favors this as well. It seems that there are going to be 50 different places in Canada where the market basket measure will be fine-tuned to local conditions. So, you know, basically we're glad that that this is going ahead. Each of the various kinds of measures have strengths and weaknesses. They all measure slightly different things. I'm glad that Canada is finally going to have a measure and stick with it. We have been using the LIM, the low income measure after tax. That's more useful if you want to compare Canada internationally, and so we could check progress out that way. But as I say, each measure has various pros and cons. So there you go.
Joe, some critics of the bill have commented on the fact that there's no actual funding attached to the strategy. What's your take on that criticism?
It's absolutely correct. It's great to announce a strategy. It's better to actually implement a strategy. So the August 21st announcement of the government, unfortunately, well, I mean, we're glad that it happened. It was made by the minister who's personally quite committed to this, Jean-Yves Duclos from Quebec City. He was the strategy was announced in Vancouver in a summer date when the House wasn't sitting, and absolutely there was no response whatsoever of any of the opposition parties. That's unfortunate. At least with the legislation, as you mentioned, that was presented to the House last week, there will be a response. It'll go to committee. It'll be looked at. But you know, to have a strategy and to reach the levels which they're suggesting, Canada will now have some targets and some timelines that need to be met. You know, there is going to have to be investment and care taken in new areas, or we will never reach those targets, frankly. So you're absolutely right. The government will have to make announcements in budget 2019, so probably February, March, likely February. It'll be an election year budget, and we think the government has to come forward at that time with some spending in the areas which they see as being priorities.
Do you think that the reduction levels, the targets that they set in place, 20% by 2020, do you think that these are feasible goals for the government themselves?
I mean, they're kind of minimal goals in terms of what the government could possibly have set. We're glad to see that they do have targets. But these goals arise because Canada signed on in 2015 to the Sustainable Development Goals. And so the countries of the United Nations, which supported first in the year 2000, the Millennium Development Goals, those were supposed to be fulfilled by 2015. And then the UN has established the Sustainable Development Goals, which are more robust, it has to be said. Canada now has signed on to that document, that international document. And so the goals that Canada has set for itself are the same as those in the Sustainable Development Goals that other countries around the world are trying to meet. So this is the minimum we could do. You can't sign on to the thing and not meet it. So in order to do that, as you say, there are some key areas where investments will be needed. We know that poverty among newcomers to Canada is uncomfortably high. We know that newcomers, as defined by Statistics Canada, are people that are in this country for 10 years or less. The poverty rate for those people is over 30%. We know that single moms, single parents, but mostly single moms, are still highly represented. Racialized communities, highly represented. Aboriginal people, poverty levels are way higher. So, you know, there will have to be targeted programs and spending, or those rather grandiose numbers of reducing poverty by 2020 and then by half by 2030, they will not be met.
So, Joe, you mentioned before that you'd like to see some funding attached to this strategy. What type of programs would Citizens for Public Justice like to see put in place to reduce poverty in Canada?
Yeah, so one of the most interesting things about poverty is such a multifaceted area, isn't it? You know, there are a range of concerns. So when you bring a big group of anti-poverty activists together, you have people that are interested in various sectors. So the housing community, the child care community, the people that are interested in Aboriginal poverty, people that are interested in youth poverty among young people or children, you know. The federal government made a unanimous commitment in the House in 1989 to end poverty among children by the year 2000. And, of course, that seemed like the right thing to do, but it has not been done. So when you look at ways and means, we have programs for all these different things, And there are several really specific things that the federal government would have to do. They have committed $40 billion over a long time period for work on affordable housing. This is laudable. Canada at the federal level needs to get back into the housing game. That money, a lot of it has to start moving out a lot faster and get those affordable housing projects going. So that will certainly be something we expect to see in the next budget. I think on November 20th, the International Day for Children, you'll see a report card, the annual report card of a group called Campaign 2000, which has over 100 organizations as part of it. They'll release their report card on child poverty in Canada, and they'll be suggesting some very concrete ways to address child poverty in Canada. Aboriginal people are really concerned about the differences between spending, for example, for children on reserve, for schools, or for social programs for kids on reserves. They've asked for the Parliamentary Budget Office to do a kind of a gap analysis that looks at, you know, how are we underspending on reserves for Aboriginal kids, and how we can begin to ramp up spending that will help some of those terrible conditions we see there. But there's a range of other things that have to be done in reserve. You could, for example, increase payments through, say, the Canada Child Benefit to families on reserve that have kids. But if we have hundreds of reserve situations where people can't get clean drinking water, handing out a little bit of extra money is not going to go very far to help those kinds of situations. So there has to be infrastructure spending, especially for those kinds of groups. So there's a wide range of things that Canada could do to make a difference. One of the things I think would be really, really important would be, and it was suggested in something called the Alternative Federal Budget, that was a call for a kind of a dignity payment by the federal government, which would be available for all of the provinces to use if they increased social welfare payments when they receive some of this money. So that would mean, you know, there isn't a province in Canada that pays a living amount of money to a person that's receiving social benefits. Anybody receiving social benefits is going to fall under the poverty line. And so we're kind of punishing people for being in conditions where they either can't work or forced to go on welfare or in difficult situations, even with Canadians with disabilities. So there's a huge range of things we could do. It's kind of depending on the priorities and the values of each government, and I think that's what we'll see rolled out in the February 2019 budget.
We'll definitely be paying attention in February to see what is outlined in the 2019 federal budget. And Joe, thank you so much for giving us your time today. It's very much appreciated.
Terrific. Thanks very kindly for your interest, and let's keep at it together.
We're now joined on the line by Laura Neidhart, the Development and Communications Coordinator for Canada Without Poverty. Laura, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
So just first question off the bat, what is your reaction to Bill C-87, Canada's poverty reduction strategy?
Well, we're definitely pleased to see this moving forward. So Bill C-87 is largely sort of the second step in the introduction of the Canada's first national poverty reduction strategy, which was launched first in August of this year. So this is kind of the legislative component that is bringing some of the pieces of that strategy, hopefully, to life. And when the CPRS, the poverty reduction strategy, was announced in August, it was kind of met with a mixed reaction from the anti-poverty community. A national poverty reduction strategy is something we've been working towards for a very long time. But as you might have seen, it didn't come with any new investments. It didn't come with any new programs or any real strong anti-poverty measures. So it kind of announced some administrative tools that are the pieces that are in Bill C-87, and we definitely welcome those. But it's something, you know, we really want to see the government take another step forward on this and make a much bigger commitment. The Bill C-87 introduces three, what we're kind of referring to as administrative tools, that will help us definitely set up a framework from which we can actually address and hopefully eradicate poverty in Canada. And those include the introduction of legislative targets and timelines, reducing poverty by 20% by 2020 and by 50% by 2030, the introduction of Canada's first official poverty line, based on the market basket measure, which is sort of a consumer basket of goods, and the introduction of a national council, advisory council on poverty, which sort of the details of which remain to be seen. So those are all pieces individually that my organization and anti-poverty organizations across the country are applauding, but at the same time, it's sort of we were really hoping to see a lot more commitment from the government.
Yeah, so you mentioned the desire to see more funding for poverty reduction, or I guess any funding for poverty reduction. What kind of programs would Canada Without Poverty like to see?
Well, I definitely think we're going to have to do a lot more and a lot more bolder action to get to even the lower standard, the lower target that the CPRS is and the Poverty Reduction Act are trying to say. So that includes the 50% reduction of poverty by 2030. So something that's kind of interesting about that, just to give a little context and then get into the programs, is that Canada in 2015 committed to the Sustainable Development Goals, number one of which is the eradication of poverty by 2030. And if you dig a little deeper, there's a sub-target in there that says, you know, poverty, that states should seek to reduce poverty by at least half by 2030. So we're kind of going for a lower goal, which is a little unfortunate to see. But even then, we're going to have to take a lot of action to do that. And that is going to take investment that we are hoping to see in budget 2019. And that would look like increased social transfers to provinces and territories that are based on conditions where provinces and territories are putting them towards their own poverty reduction measures, and that people who are receiving those social transfers are experiencing clawbacks with their other forms of provincial or territorial assistance. We want to see things like, as an organization, we're really interested in a holistic approach to addressing poverty. So it isn't just income security. It's about housing. It's about food security. It's about access to important services like childcare, transportation, healthcare. So something that we've participated in every year is something called the Alternative Federal Budget, put together by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. And among the things that we've called for in the 2019 budget version of that is a pharmacare program, because 1 in 10 people in Canada can't afford their prescription drugs. Some food security measures, and including a national food policy that the government is supposed to be coming out with, because we're seeing an increased usage of food banks in most communities in Canada year over year, including an increase in the number of seniors who are having to access food banks, and childcare, because we know that that's one of the most unaffordable things for families, particularly for single-parent-led households, and it's something that's really making people live in more precarious circumstances. So what we're hoping to see is direct poverty measures in terms of social transfers, but also investment in other social programs that will help people become more economically sure-footed.
I think an interesting debate that we've been covering ourselves here at Beyond the Headlines is the tension between right now the legislative reform happening in the not-for-profit and the charity sector, something that your organization has been a part of and fairly vocal on in the last couple of months. And it's interesting to see that echoed in this discussion that we're having today about new poverty reduction strategies. Some of the most recent directions from the federal government have been to download more service delivery aspects of poverty reduction strategies onto the not-for-profit sector, with the announcement of a further poverty reduction strategy from the federal government. Would you say that this bill puts enough supportive mechanisms or administrative support tools, like you were saying, in the hands of not-for-profits like Canada Without Poverty to be able to feasibly meet the targets that they put in place?
That's a good question. And, you know, I think it's kind of a twofold thing. We're obviously very pleased as an organization that's been involved in a charter challenge around the Income Tax Act to see that the government is acknowledging in Bill C-A-6 that public policy dialogue is an important part of Canadian civil society. I mean, definitely agree with that. And I think, you know, my organization isn't a service-providing organization. We're much more focused on the human rights and policy aspects of it. But I know that with the housing strategies that was announced last year, with the poverty reduction strategy, there is this, like, maybe it'll be the burden will be placed on the nonprofit organizations to actually address poverty when there should be leadership from the government. And from our perspective, at least, this should be focused on getting support into the hands of people without necessarily routing it through unnecessary avenues. But with this, you know, the CPRS itself and what has been tabled so far are pretty limited in what they are actually talking about in terms of funding. So unlike the homelessness partnership strategy, or which I think has been renamed, or the national housing strategy, the CPRS, as it was announced in August, is largely a report of the poverty measures that this government already put into place. So things like the Canada Child Benefit and then the workers' income tax, or working income tax benefit, which is now the Canada Workers' Benefit. So because there hasn't really been anything introduced, we don't know what this is going to look like for nonprofit organizations. And hopefully this is something that is, you know, in an ideal world, it's some sort of a collaborative partnership between these organizations and the government. And it's driven by, again, people with a lived experience of poverty. But right now, the only sort of consultation that's happening around what the CPRS and Bill C87 are going to create into reality is there's a consultation around the market basket measure, which is the tool that's going to be used as the official poverty line. And we're also not sure about what that's going to, you know, what is going to come to fruition from that. So again, I guess the answer to a lot of this is that it kind of remains to be seen what happens next and what this actually looks like as an on-the-ground reality for both people living in poverty and for the nonprofits that are serving them.
So I think my last question, we're recording this episode a week after Bill C-87 was tabled, and I think we saw in the immediate aftermath some media attention. I know Canada Without Poverty had some, you know, some interviews, and mm-hmm. there seemed to be some saliency about the issue, but you know, a week later it seems to have completely fallen off the public agenda. What do you think can be done to create a context where Canadians care about poverty reduction on a daily basis?
That is a great question, and I don't know that I know the answer. You know, we were a little frustrated as I think a community when the CPRS was announced and launched in August, and it was basically met with, in addition to a few, outside of a few interviews that we did with the CBC, it was really met with radio silence, and that was partially because it was August and everyone's on holiday, but. You know, we did see a little bit of buzz of interest when Minister Duclos, announcement last week, but it's really something that doesn't take priority for people in Canada. We're definitely much more interested in talking about all the other things that are going on. And I think it's for all of us to think about as a priority as we go into a federal election. So the reality of life for people who are in the most marginalized communities in Canada, which includes people in low income, is hardly ever a priority for us. In our social consciousness or in federal electoral politics. But I think it's something that, as we've seen sort of the introduction of at least these national measures and this sort of approach, however mild, to national leadership on this, I'm hopeful that more people are paying attention. There was a really interesting Angus Reid poll, I think about 6 months ago, that where 71% of people in Canada who responded to this poll said that they were interested in addressing poverty and they saw it as something that was the responsibility of the government. So it isn't, we are shifting away from this viewpoint that it's, you know, poverty is the fault of people who just can't get their act together or make poor choices, or it's all about the self. And we are starting to see it as a matter of justice rather than just a matter of charity. And I'm hopeful that with that shift comes an interest in and prioritizing this, because we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and we have an astronomically high poverty rate, and we don't seem to be interested, as it stands right now, at least, in making it a priority for us to not have that be the case. You know, it's not good to be an anomaly in the face of our peers when that anomaly is about us having one of the highest poverty rates. So I think we're starting to see the shift, and I'm hopeful that all of the awareness building and work that the people who are the hardest workers in the poverty community do will be part of that shift. But I think it's, you know, it's just about making this a priority for people as they think about who they're voting for, or as the parties think about their platform. And I guess we'll see what that ends up looking like in 2019.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. We're certainly going to be paying attention to the federal budget in February or March, whenever it's released, and hoping that there are some concrete poverty reduction measures. And, you know, we'll continue paying attention after that. So, yeah, thank you so much for joining us, and hope you have a good one.
Thank you.
So now that we've heard from the experts, this is our take. Dimitri and Cellini, what's your opinions on this bill and where we're kind of at with poverty reduction in Canada?
Well, I think for starters, I think it's a pretty bold and ambitious set of goals that the federal government has set out. And I think something that has been very unanimous in everyone that we sort of spoke to, and my perspective on it myself, is that they finally chosen to define it in a uniform way. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to help set the administrative foundation for our domestic poverty initiatives nationwide. I think that's something that the poverty movement itself here in Canada has been lacking in terms of documentation and administrative foundation. So I'm very hopeful based off of this unified and uniform measure. So Cellini, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think the fact that they're finally standardizing the official measure is fantastic. I think the first problem anyone in Canada faces when they're trying to address poverty reduction is, okay, how do you measure this? People throw around all mm-hmm. kinds of numbers all the time, and they make no sense because you can't compare them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is fantastic. I do disagree a little bit. I think maybe the government didn't go as ambitious as they could have gone with respect to the targets. Mm-hmm. But having said that, maybe in another way, it's almost better to have something that's realistic rather than ambitious. Right. And these targets, I think they are realistic.
Yeah, I agree with both of you in terms of the measurement. I remember back during the Quebec provincial election campaign, the then Premier Philippe Couillard answered a question one day where he basically said that he thought that a family of four could live off of $75 a week for food. Mm-hmm. And there was obviously some negative pushback against that comment. And I think just providing this definition with the market basket approach is needed so that politicians could get a real grasp of what the cost of living is in this country. It's not low. It's high for very many people. And there's, as we've heard from our guests and as the research shows, there's a lot of people living below the poverty line. So we need to start to normalize that conversation of and really put it into concrete numbers of where we're at as a country and what we can do to improve.
That's actually also a really good point. Like, the great thing about the market basket measure is that it's flexible and it's tailored according to different people's needs. Mm-hmm. It varies across the different geographic span, which is fantastic. And it also takes into account the different types of households that exist in Canada. The way poverty is going to be measured for a two-person income household is going to be very different than someone with dependents or, you know, a one-person household. Yeah. So that's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really like the approach that the federal government is taking in terms of stakeholder engagement before implementing this new unified measure of the basket. I think that will give, like you were talking about, a regional context and proportional representation when unifying this measure. So I'm very hopeful that these consultations, like our guests were speaking about, will be successful and effective. I also think that the addition to entrench a national advisory council is something that will be very effective in the future. I don't know if I'm hopeful about it, but providing the minister with actual statistics that are changing as the country changes is something that I think is very beneficial to the anti-poverty movement within Canada. And I think it will sort of aid in our action abroad in reducing poverty as well.
So I just want to return to something that I think we heard from both of our guests and from multiple critics, and that's the need for actual funding attached to the strategy going forward. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's super important. And they both touched on a specific point, housing. Housing's a huge issue. We're, mm-hmm. you know, we're students living in Toronto.
Yes.
We're facing high housing costs. And, you know, we're very lucky with our situation and the school that we're able to attend. But for a lot of people, they don't have that same reality. And for them, just being able to afford a house in the city is not even a realistic option.
Yeah.
We heard that, you know, $40 billion have been attached to the Housing Act, but that's been really slow to roll out. And I think that it's important that the federal government commits to rolling out that money now and really gets it going. Just having a plan with a number attached doesn't mean anything if it's not actually implemented. And, Definitely. You know, we're running out of time for this parliamentary session. Who knows where we'll be going and what this conversation will be like in a year, right? So I would like to see some sort of strong commitments to funding and implementation soon.
I think another really important thing to kind of take away from this discussion is that although this specific bill doesn't add any new funding, it's attached to a strategy, Canada's first poverty strategy, that kind of couples together all of Canada's poverty reduction strategies, and it totals to $22 billion in government funding since 2015. When you compare that to Canada's international assistance, something to the tune of $5.4 billion, so huge investments into Canadians.
Okay, great. Now that we've had our take on the issue, what would you guys like to see moving forward? What should be on our radar in the next couple of months?
For me, I think I'd really like to keep an eye on the federal-provincial relations going forward on this issue. I'd like to see, you know, what's the relationship like between the provinces and the federal government to take on something as big as poverty reduction together and to see how their strategies can complement each other.
Yeah, I'll be paying attention to 2019 federal budget and where we go from there. We're heading into an election. There's going to be a lot of promises. Let's see what those promises are. And then I think the last thing is poverty, and we heard this from both of our guests, poverty is not it's not a single issue. It hits people in very different ways, and there's very different intersectional kind of effects of it. I think I'd like to see specific targeted approaches to different segments of the population. There's different realities for youth. There's different realities for women. There's different realities for Indigenous peoples, and those all need a focus, and I think that it's important that we start that conversation going forward.
Great. No, I agree with both of you. I think all of those things will be something to keep on our radar. For me personally, I'd like to keep an eye out for the child report card that will be coming out on November 20th. That will be gauging Canada's federal intervention in national youth poverty levels. I'd also be looking out to see how the consultations on how the basket measure will be implemented in different regionalities across the country will be done, and how those stakeholders will be engaged, and how their additions to this measure will be taken, and if they'll be taken seriously. And of course, the federal budget will be a big tell if they're going to put their money where their mouth is on this. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to The Weekly and our discussion on Bill C-87, Canada's National Poverty Reduction Act. If you like what you heard, remember to hit that subscribe button and share with your friends and family. We hope you turn in next week.